Hello again, everybody. Welcome. This is Julie Knudsen. How are you guys doing? This is the podcast, Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 114. And in this episode, I'm going to catch up on some listener questions, hopefully nothing too long, and also do a little bit of shameless self-promotion on this podcast as well. I had mentioned in some previous ones that the videos were just about ready. And they are out now. And I'm real happy with that. And they are on, it's a new format. And David James, just so amazing, got all this set up for me. I know how to train dogs, not do the stuff he did. Did all the filming, all the editing, all the production, and then got this whole platform that this is on set up. So it's on teachable.com. And it's literally, I mean, if you were going to type it in on the internet, it would be Bateswerks, BATESWORKS, .teachable.com. And that's where, Bates is my middle name, that's where you can locate the videos. And then there's some coaching on there if anybody's interested in that too. So we've got videos on basic obedience, force fetch, wool conditioning, collar conditioning, and each individual video is about an hour and a half. And no, it's not like you sit down and watch Gone with the Wind. Okay, it's not that way. There's an introduction to kind of give you the approach and a little bit of perspective on all of this. And then what you'll see in these videos is a bunch of different dogs and different kinds of dogs. On the obedience, there's even a little, I think he's 8 or 10 weeks old puppy, 10 or 12, something like that, all the way up to dogs that are, you know, getting towards the end of it and understand it. And you see different kinds of dogs, just the approach with all different kinds of dogs versus, you know, the things that I've seen and watched, and even going to a seminar and somebody brings out a dog that already does all this stuff, and then they show you how to do it. And it always works, right? But then when you go home and you do what you saw them do and it doesn't always work, it can be very confusing. So then you go to another video or another YouTube thing or another seminar. So I try really hard in all of these to show the variety, and also to show when it doesn't work just perfectly, and then what do you do? Because as most of you know that train dogs, that's where the real challenge is. You know, you kind of have an idea what you're supposed to do, and then the dog does weird stuff or not what you expect or not what your other dogs have done, or, you know, completely something unexpected, or they just don't respond at all and they're just sitting there like you're not doing anything, and how frustrating that can be. So all of the videos are trying to show you different dogs and different ways and things to think about, and some of the small things, some of the nuances when you're doing this training thing that you may not have thought about that might be important or at least help you out a little bit. So that's what's done on those things. And we did basically a year of filming. And then poor David, I don't know how many hours he had to watch that stuff and pick out the good stuff and weed out the bad stuff. And so I hope for people that do want some help and do like the visual thing on that, that they find those useful, because there was a lot of work and a lot of, I hope this, you know, is useful to people's stuff going in there. So we've got those four. And you see in the beginning, a dog at the beginning of all of the processes. And then at the end, you see a dog that is finished with that stuff. And what the ultimate objective is and what it looks like when they understand what you've taught them and they carry it out. So I'm real hopeful that this is going to be something a little bit different because of the amount of work it took and time, and a little bit different and maybe something that people will find useful. I would have when I was learning all this, and of course I'm still learning it, but when I was learning this, if I could have watched that and seen it up close and what was happening and what happens when it doesn't work and what they do and different kinds of responses, I would have gotten a little better understanding a little more rapidly. So that's my goal in that. We still, we're going to film the D chase one, and I have to have the right dogs for that, and it can't be 102 outside. So that one is in the works. I want it out this year because that is such a powerful tool. One, you know, it really helps bring out point, and maybe most of all, it's a safety thing. I don't care how crazy of an upland hunter you are, and whether you have a pointing dog or a flushing dog, no dog should be chasing birds across the field uncontrolled. They should only be going after birds that they have been sent for, and not after any bird that you don't want them to go after. And so the de-chase is one of, between that and the walk, probably my personal greatest contributions to the dog world that I've been lucky to be in. And so we're gonna work real hard on that one and get that one out. Safety. Also a real good point initiator or bringer out if you have it in there. So that one will be coming soon. The one other part, and here's this is the shameless self-promotion here. The other thing is, as a part of this too, there's also a program on this teachable.com, which is an excellent format. It's used all over the world for people. If you want to learn how to make cupcakes or knit or solve, you know, physics problems, this is a place now where people are doing it. So you log on there, you get an account, you log on, and there's infinite number of classes and stuff you can take. I got my own little Bates Works on there. And you go on there, and when you sign up for a class and pay for it, of course, when you sign up for that, it's not just a big long video. It's the introduction, and then there's all the segments. And so you can look at a segment and look at another. And if you want to go back and review something in the third segment or the first one, you can have total control over it. So like I said, it's not like sitting through Gone with the Wind. You can look at little pieces and parts that were real useful you can go back to. So it's an awesome format for this. So that, like I said, I would love to have had something like that to learn all kinds of things from. And it's got cool other stuff too if you want to look at Teachable. And then I'm also going to offer through that, this is a kind of an experiment, because, you know, I got one of the best triathlon coaches in the nation, in the world probably, who helped me in 1 year's time, you know, go from starting to do a big Ironman to going to the world championships. That's what good coaching did for me, you know, and yeah, I believe in that and have my whole life. And so I'm going to offer some coaching, personal coaching, on a month-by-month basis for people who don't want to send their dog off to a trainer but still want some really good professional help. If you live right close to one, or, you know, one is your cousin or something, that's awesome. But I'm going to offer some coaching for people that, you know, maybe want some professional help but don't want to send dog off, or don't want to go the big, you know, that's a lot of money to do that, or just want some help on a few things. And it's going to be a thing where, you know, if you sign up for that and we talk and make sure that we both agree that it's the right thing, it'll work for you, and it's something that you're really serious about. And then through discussion, through videos, you know, and with phones now, it's real easy to video a training session or something. And then we can go back and forth with that and build one, find out where you are and where your dog is and where you really started from, not where you wish you were or hope you were, but where you actually are and what your dog's skill base is and what yours, and then working with that and what your ultimate goal is, come up with a plan and things to carry out and things to work on in a controlled manner, moving at whatever rate is best for you and your dog. And so, you know, constant feedback on a weekly basis, giving assignments, what you need to do, looking at what you're doing, talking about the problems and working through them. So, like I said, it's kind of an experiment. I don't think too many people in the dog world have done that. Again, I would have found that useful. I believe in really excellent coaching. It can sure make a difference. And if you can't be somewhere, you know, with your pro trainer doing this, it's something to think about. So that's available on teachable.com too, if you guys want to go check that out. Again, batesworks.teachable.com is where that is. Okay. End of shameful self-promotion. So let's get on to what some of the listener questions I've gotten since I've gotten back on this would be. Okay, one I got recently is, I've had several people that are getting puppies, don't even have them yet, and they want to send their dog off when it's 6 months old. And so I was asked by a couple people exact same thing, what can I do to best prepare my dog for going off to a trainer for some months at a time? That is a really excellent question. I wish more people would ask that, because very often what I get is people, you know, they get a real nice dog and all the kids love it and the family loves it and they get real connected and it's real hard to turn it loose and let it get out there, you know, let somebody else have it. But so they have their puppy and it's just, you know how awesome they are. And so they do the walk. Most people that have anything to do with me, they do the walk with the little puppy and they do some retrieving and it's so fun and it goes everywhere with them. And some people, some single males particularly, if they have the kind of profession that they can do it, the dog goes everywhere with them, everywhere in the vehicle, it's everywhere. It does everything with them unless they're, you know, going off to a meeting or something, then it has to wait in the office or the house. But they do that and, you know, think that's a good thing. Or some people just kind of let the kids play with it and live in the backyard and they'll send it off to a trainer to get it all trained up, right, for whatever it is you want, whether it's just good behavior, hunting, competition. I've had one of my very best clients, I just love them to death, but they would always say, well, we just spoiled him or her rotten because we knew that the trainer would fix it all. And that just makes me very frustrated, because that's sure easy on the people. And what it is for the dog, I don't think they're aware. So I want to talk just briefly for people that are interested in sending their dog off to have some professional training by any good trainer. Okay, by any good trainer. And just real briefly, a good trainer is one that's been doing this and has proven that they can consistently produce the good results you want. Show you everything that they do. You know, don't keep the kennels hidden from you or their training methods hidden from you. That it will answer any question you have, no matter how, you know, continuously and how many you have, will answer those things. And someone who also houses your dog and feeds your dog well, right, safely, where they cannot be stolen, they cannot, you know, they're not all housed together, they're safe from all weather, good, bad, you know, hot, cold, whatever it is, so they're not all, you know, where they could get in a fight, and that they are fed a top quality food, and that there's plenty of it, so, and that the people treat you well. If a trainer doesn't treat you very well, and you're a thinking and talking human, then you've got to wonder what they're going to do with your dog when there's no one around and they're having a bad day. So you should be treated well by any trainer. And most of, you know, the good ones I know, they're just fantastic people. And there are very good trainers out there. But ones that have, with proven success, consistently, not one dog or two, but proven success are really the way to go. So that said, if you're sending your dog off to a good trainer, then to one, make your investment, get the most bang for your buck, to make every dollar count, because it's expensive to have your dogs professionally trained, to make that count, and also to make it as positive and smooth and reasonable process for your dog as you possibly can. There are several things that you should have in your dog so that when your dog goes off to this, it's not as difficult sometimes as it turns out to be. So let me explain what I'm talking about that. So I assume since everyone is listening to this, we're talking about upland and waterfowl retrieving dogs for the most part. So if your dog is going there to learn some skills for hunting or competing, whatever it is, okay, so if they're going for that, then one of the things that you want are some of those things in place. You want the light bulbs already turned on. You want the light lit. Because if you haven't taught your dog what a bird is, or you haven't taught your dog what retrieving is, then when you send them off to the trainer, they're going to have to start with this basically puppy level teaching stuff, which means they can't get into the meat of why you send them to a professional trainer. You know, the obedience and the force fetch and all the stuff that's coming, they can't get to that because they have to go, okay, this is what retrieving is, little dog. It, you know, this is what you're supposed to do. Or this is what a feathery thing is. So if you can have acquainted your dog, one with, you know, retrieving. If you're talking about a retriever, that is their genetic programming. If they don't have it, then you can't really send them off to a trainer because a trainer can't put something in there that's not there. Or you sure don't want them to try. So if you have a retriever, then do a few retrieves in the morning and a few retrieves in the evening. So you develop that passion for retrieving. You know, and if preferably if you do it where they go out and come back, right, and they understand the game. They don't have, you know, the trainer can make it all pretty and solid and steady. Don't work on steady. If at all, don't work on it before the dog has a great passion for it. Because there's nothing like making something that they're mildly interested in all boring and full of rules. So make sure you got the retrieving thing in there. If you're going to have an upland dog, if you can take that young dog at least several times, preferably more than several times, and expose them to upland birds, you know, quail when they're little guys, quail or chucker. And yeah, I know they're expensive and they fly away because you don't start shooting them. You can't teach them about live birds and guns and in the field and all that stuff at the same time. Let them learn. Let that little flickering ember inside of them kind of flame up when they're going, holy cow, there are, you know, this is their heroin fields, like I say in all these things. Let them learn about that. So, you know, a lot of times you'll see that point if for the pointing guys early on. You'll see the intensity on the flushing guys when they're going, oh, these things are out here and it's so exciting. Because in the beginning, they don't know the difference between if you're looking for a bird or a really nice mouse nest. So it's nice for them to learn, you know, mice nests are cool, but there's these feathery things. And so that's important to expose them to that, you know, especially a fair amount. The more they learn that stuff, the better. Don't keep at it so they learn all kinds of bad habits like chasing birds to the next county so that now you have to take some of the fire out of them out there and teach them rules that they learn, you know. I mean, it just seems mean to them. No, I chase everything. I always get to. I always have. And suddenly you come in and, well, no more. So if you can, you know, back it off before too many bad habits start. And never do as much as you think you should. Don't, you know, on retrieving, just do a couple retrieves and stop, no matter how much they like it. Most people do whatever it is they're doing with their dog until the dog gets bored or starts doing bad stuff. So they let it get bad, and that's where they stop. So that's what you leave with your dog is the bad part. So especially with little puppies, do some really good stuff and stop. So that's where you leave it. So when you start up the next time, it's right there. That's real important. So you want the birds, and you want that several other things before you send them off to a trainer. One is it would be really nice if you taught them not only the walk through the field, stay with me and we go out in the field, but the other thing would be sometimes you walk on a leash and you do it cooperatively. you do not just yank me wherever you want, because if you don't teach them that when they're smaller and it's easier to teach, then your trainer's going to have to do that when they're like a big fire-breathing dragon, and it's going to take some pressure to change their thinking. And so if you have them a little more prepared when they come in, then they don't have to have so much enforcement on teaching obedience. So you make it much easier on the dog if they already know. They don't have to be all perfect like they should be when you get them back, but they should have a good understanding of, I need to just cooperate. I need to listen to you. And so that's another deal. If you teach as a puppy, and in my little puppy things, I talk about this stuff. If you teach the dog, I'm important, and when I say stuff, I mean, you can't enforce a bunch of stuff with a puppy. But if you teach them, when I say stuff, something, it's significant, respond to me. If I call you to come, don't turn and just go the other direction. Now, I know, easier said than done. But if they, a lot of times, when you just let them do whatever because the trainer's going to train them, you're teaching them to completely ignore people. And I get so many of those in where I call them or I say, hey, stop that. And I don't even exist, even if I'm making noise. So now I have to teach this dog, hello, I'm there and I'm important. And you don't run the show. And I'm not talking about being tough or anything else. Just from the beginning, don't let them tune you out and just do whatever they want. It's much easier to work with a little 3-month-old and 4-month-old than it is a fire-breathing 7- and 8-month-old. I can tell you that. So the more you get them to understand that you're present and you're important, the better that is. Another thing before you send them off to a trainer is teach your dog that sometimes they are away from you, they're somewhat confined, and they need to just be on their own. For a lot of dogs, when they're dropped off someplace and they've never been just on their own, and by on their own, I mean you have a kennel run or a space in the backyard or a room where they go, and when there's company or you're leaving, and they have to be there by themselves and be quiet. If they already understand how to do that, that's why when I do it, I started at 8 weeks. They come when I've gotten puppies, and you know, you love on them and you do some retrieving and do some stuff and maybe give them a little dinner, and then you put them in their kennel for a while. And when you start that at 8 weeks, they are fantastic. There's like, oh, I guess it's just downtime for me now. I don't care how, if your dog is 100% house dog, downtime is something you will never regret. You know, like I said, if they go to a vet and they have to stay in a, you know, that's some kind of surgery or something, so they got to stay in a kind of a box at the vet's, and they're going, oh, I guess I'm in here now. It makes their life much easier on them. So they should have a quiet place. They should learn sometimes I'm in a crate. I mean, maybe that's where they eat dinner. Maybe that's where they spend the night. But sometimes I'm confined, and it's a good thing, and I'm okay with it. But when you take them for the first time, you know, to a boarding kennel or a training kennel, and they're just raising a ruckus, you know, nightmare is this? Let me out of this. And it's very hard on the dog. And it doesn't have to be. If they've learned somewhere, you know, sometimes you just get over there and you're not with me, and you be quiet, and just, it's a much, much easier thing. It's easier on the dog. I will tell you that. Much, much easier on the dog if you do that. And the other thing, if you send a dog off to a trainer, most trainers, none I've ever known, free feed, right? Usually, most of us feed at the end of the day, unless you have a skinny dog. Then you've got to make sure you keep the weight up with breakfast. But because of torsion and food in their intestines while they're running and active and busy, that's a dangerous thing. So to avoid that, you tend to feed at the end of the day. So if you teach these little guys, you know, the food bowl goes down and you eat and then it comes back up and we're done. So if they're going to go off, because that's what it's going to be at the trainer. So if they're used to that, there's not that long. They usually go, if they've been free fed and then they come to a trainer, they'll go 2 or 3 days and they don't eat, because it's like, this is not how I eat. This is not what I do. Then when they get hungry enough, they get right with the program. But you know, you don't have to do that either. Also, if you do travel with your dog and if you go hunting, you don't want to hunt them on a full tummy, right? Big old bunch of food. But it's so nice if they already know, you know, I work, and then at the end of the day, quiet time, and that's when I have dinner. They'll eat on the road. They'll eat while you're traveling. They'll eat because they're used to, you know, I'm hungry and I want to eat, and I always eat this time of day. That makes that a whole lot more useful. So those are some things you can do with your dog that makes your training get going much, much faster, saves you some training dollars. It makes it easier on the trainer, but that's not what I'm talking about. When it's easier on the trainer, it's easier on the dog. And so they're not having to completely rethink their whole place in the world because you've already taught them that. Frankly, if you never send your dog to a trainer, you should do that stuff too. But certainly if you do, you make it a lot easier on the trainer and you save your training dollars, because you can get going on serious stuff much more quickly. Okay, next, I won't call this a listener question. I'll call it a listener debate that I had. And so I'm going to take this up. I was talking with somebody about their dog that I had trained, and it was coming back for a little brush up and stuff. And they were telling me things that this dog had been doing. And fortunately, I knew the dog well, so I knew what the dog knew. And so, for example, one of the things is when they're hunting and then the dog, instead of coming straight back, was trying to take the easier way and, you know, actually got themselves in trouble by getting into a place that had some bad stuff that they shouldn't have been in. And so the question on that one was, so I need this dog to handle. The dog was not trained to that level to handle. You know, what can I do to keep that from happening? And I told him, I said, that's not a handling problem right there so much as it is a basic obedience problem. And he said, no, actually, it's a handling problem. Arguing with me, he's like, no, it's, well, how's that a basic obedience problem? And I said, well, because the dog wasn't coming to you when you called. Now, I'm not talking about, the handling is handling. If you're out in the water or you're on the land and a dog is somewhere and you need him to be somewhere very different, and that's a part of your hunting thing, then you have to be able to handle on that stuff. But in this one, the dog was returning and was just taking the way that it really wanted to go, and unwisely got into a little bit of trouble there. And I told him, but it, so what this was, and I just said, all right, I'm not going to argue with you, but you were calling and this dog did not come to you. And it was going, yeah, I'm getting there, but I think I'd be better off this way. That is, folks, disobedience. Because if you did teach your fundamental obedience correctly, when the dog is somewhere close to you, not 200 yards out, but when they're, 40 feet away from you, and you say, here, doing basic obedience correctly, the dog should come directly to you because that's what here means, or whatever word you say. So many, many, many problems that people have are, they confuse, they get real complicated, and they get all kind of levels of weird stuff, when most of the time it still comes down to basic obedience. So that's one. The dog wasn't coming to him when he called. And here was our, I'll just give you what my answer was. I said, you need to, he goes, so should I have used the electric collar and gotten after? It's like, no, because this dog believed, and this is important, guys. Like, no, we're not going to just fry them because they're doing something that they think is okay. That doesn't work. And it's also not very nice to the dog. So I said, here didn't mean that much to your dog. And his response was, I told you this was a debate, really more than a question, was, when I'm out working with her, she always comes when I call. I was like, good. Have you ever enforced? Well, no, I don't have to. I said, all right. So because you have not created any association with being called and having come directly to me enforced, then there's no sense of urgency about how they get back to you, but just that they get back to you. So when you're out doing no basic obedience and you call the dog and she comes directly to you and everything's happy, then she made the choice to come directly to you, right? And so it's a but. There was nothing more compelling a little over to the side, so of course she's going to come right back to you. So there was no association. There was no sense of urgency attached to that hear command. So if you want dogs to come to you, and again, don't, I'm not talking at a big distance, right? And then we're going to need handling when they're very far away, because they just, it's just doesn't make the same sense to them as it does you. They should be able to handle if you're in a kind of bind out there, distance, and when exciting things are happening. But when it's just calling a dog to you that just retrieves something right over here, okay, you have to have them understand that here is very serious. And the way that you have dogs understand anything is very serious is by enforcing it. And so if while they were out just doing basic obedience work, he created that association with here means I need to get my rear end in there right now, what could be a jerk on a leash, a nick on the collar, however it is you do it. So even though, again, even though the dog is going, sure, come on back, We're doing whatever is an appropriate level of enforcement on here. So they're like, I'm coming. You need a sense of urgency on the here command. If that's what you've got, if you need sometimes to be able to get them to come directly to you. So you train for the inevitable. You train for sometime I need the dog to do this no matter what. Those of us that compete, when you compete, you don't have any enforcement at all. There's no collar, no leash, there's no nothing on the dog. And when you blow that sit whistle, they need to stop. And when you call them to you, they need to come to you. And all of that is because in training, you set up that sense of urgency about when you, by enforcing things at whatever level that's meaningful to that dog, not the lightning bolt from God here, but just like, hey, sit means sit, or here means here. And so that same thing has to be done on rudimentary, simple stuff. And the dog just said, I am coming back. I'm just going the easy way. because they had no sense of urgency, of directness, of come right back to me. So that was the problem. Many times I hear people talk about what they think is a force fetch problem. And this one I've seen a ton, and I've talked about this before. Dogs retrieving something out in the water, bumper bird, whatever it is. And they come in. This always happens to people at junior hunt tests and started level stuff in HRC. They come back, and then they come in out of the water, and then they set the bird down. And then maybe they pick it up, and maybe they don't. And then they shake, and they sniff some stuff over there. And then maybe they pick it up, and maybe they don't. And so everybody's, you got it. You know, you need to force fetch that dog. That is not, assuming the dog was force fetched, but that is not a force fetch problem, whether it was even force fetched correctly or not. Because on a retrieve, correct, just like they're to go out, pick it up, then they are to come straight back to you. So when a dog is setting a bird down, and not, and then doing stuff and shaking and licking around and then maybe sniffing it, right? They are not returning to you. You have a hear problem again. You really do. So, you know, no matter what, whether you're force fetched or not force fetched, when you go out and come after something and then come back, you need to come back to me. In other words, hear has to have that very serious sense about it. So when they're not serious about returning to you, even when they are force-fetched, they're still, they could set it down, they could do stuff, because here, you know what, I'm getting, eventually I may get there. So it's usually not a force-fetch problem, but it is a dog that is not taking the hear command very seriously, which is basic obedience. So I've seen a lot of dogs go get their ears pinched again and do all that, and they still doesn't fix the problem because hear doesn't mean that much. So once again, there's another place where basic obedience is your problem, and all you have to do is make sure that that is solid. And there's, I could go list probably another dozen problems that are basic obedience problem, you know, like sit. You know, I can get two whistles, sit on the whistle, but if he's about 75 yards out, then he doesn't do it anymore. That is still a basic obedience problem. Sit means sit. They don't have enough sense of urgency about sit. So when doing your basic obedience, when maintaining your basic obedience with an animal, just because out in your yard doing your stuff, wherever you do it, they do everything you ask is not enough. If you're, we're talking about being able to enforce in competitive situations, being able to enforce in hunting situations, being able to have a dog understand things without having to use electricity and stuff like that, getting mad and frustrated all the time. You do it by creating a sense of seriousness about the commands that you give. And the only way you do that is by using an appropriate amount of enforcement on stuff, enough to create an association between hearing that word and knowing they have to do it. And I didn't say knowing they that they will do it, but a little bit of thing in that mind going, I got to sit, or I got to come there. And they can beat any enforcement by responding. But you have to create that that association. And I hope that makes sense. That's what we all do to train dogs to the advanced levels. You have to create that sense of, holy cow, I need to do that. Not fear, not overdoing it, but create that seriousness about it. Like I said, I'm just going to remind this one more time. Just because they'll do everything you ask, oh, look, I say heel, I say sit, I say here, they do it all fine. It's particularly when you're just training and there's not a lot going on. That's, you know, all the people that say, my dog's real good at obedience unless there's a distraction. Well, that means they're not good at obedience, because obedience means you told me to sit or heel, I have to do it, period. And by that, you have to have situations set up where the dog may wish to do something a little different or a little more slowly or not at all, and you still create that response. You still have to do what I say. So you have to enforce and create that association between when I hear that word, I know I have to do it. So a huge number of problems that people have, including several when this guy told me all the stuff his dog was doing, every single one of them came down to basic obedience. Every single one of them. And so that's true, got me thinking, that's true of a lot of people. So if you just break down the behavior. Gee, like that, the one that everybody always gets where the dog comes out of the water, sets the bird down, and doesn't come back. Okay, that is a dog. Just look at it. What is the dog not doing? They are not coming to me. So that's what I need to fix. Similarly on dogs breaking. What is a dog not doing when it's breaking? It is not sitting. So don't do the no here, bad dog, put you up, or any of that kind of stuff with that. Enforce sit. Create an association. Holy cow, when they say sit, I have to sit, no matter what. So that also comes down to a basic obedience problem. So 35 minutes with only two listener questions. I'm sorry, but they're important, and I hope maybe we got some of that across. So hot summer. Competitive season is getting ready for the end of the summer part. A lot more tests for all of us. Things are, you know, looking up in the dog world. Hopefully they will be looking up in the virus world sometime as the year goes by, so things get a little better for all of us. But a lot of opportunity to spend some time with your dog and do some good dog work. So I wish everybody well, stay healthy, and I will be back soon.